So hi, everybody. This is Jackie with Cash Flow Depot, and I want to thank you so much for calling in on the conference call tonight. I know it was kind of a short notice on this conference call, so I appreciate everybody that took time out of your busy schedule to join us for tonight. I invited David to join us for this conference call because it's such an important topic. I can tell you that when I lived in Panama now, but when I lived in Texas at my high mark, I had 72 rental properties. And it was a bit of a nightmare to have 72 rental properties. I was just using Excel spreadsheets and QuickBooks, and you know, some tenants paid with cash, and some tenants made a deposit, and some people wanted to mail stuff in, and oh, it was a nightmare to be a landlord until I learned how to do things the right way, the way that David Tilney teaches you how to do, where you have systems and where you empower the tenants to really be in charge of the property instead of you micromanaging every little thing to let them do it. So going to David Tilney's Hassle-Free Management and Master Leasing class was absolutely life-changing for me by implementing all of the systems that he had. And I think today it's more important than ever to really know what you're doing. If you're going to have rental properties, it's not just getting a house and fixing it up and then renting it out to somebody. That sounds easy. There's a lot more to it these days because of so much government rules and regulations, and you got to make sure you're dotting your I's and you're crossing your T's, or you could get yourself into some serious problems. I've heard of multi-million dollar lawsuits of people that just said the wrong thing when they were showing a rental property. So you have to be so careful, and it's extremely important to learn how to do things the right way. And that's where David Tilney comes in. He's the expert when it comes to property management. So welcome, David.
Oh, thanks, Jackie. Always a pleasure to be on your group here.
And, boy, from Panama, I'm reading what's going up and up on up in the United States, and I'm so glad I'm in Panama that, you know, tenants don't have to pay rent. You can't evict them and, you know, just all kinds of crazy stuff. It's unbelievable. Yeah, we thought we owned the property, but well, maybe not. I mean, we can't control what happens to it. So tell me a little bit about, you know, what is going on and what can landlords do, if anything.
Well, I mean, the changes in laws have been incredible in states that I'm involved in, meaning Colorado. I've seen more changes in the law in the last year and a half than I saw from 1978 until that time. California also, same kinds of things. You know, everything from warrant of habitability. In Colorado, the short version of that just says that landlords are responsible for everything, period. No ands, ifs, or buts. And very hard to thread the needle and be able to create contracts that change that, because we want responsible people in our property that want to take responsibility and take charge and make our properties their homes. California is much the same way. In California, I think I'd rather be a tenant than an owner. If I was a tenant, you know, under current situation, if you're there for 12 months or longer, you can be there for the rest of your life as long as it's going to be a rental, because the only way a landlord can get you out is if they can show cause, meaning show you do something that violates the rental contract. Other than that, it's, you know, they've got to buy you out essentially under certain terms and conditions if they're moving in themselves or something, and they have a limitation of a rent increase of 5% plus this CPI up to a maximum of 10%. So if you lease the property and then turn around and sublease the property, then your occupant tenant could only go up by the exact same amounts, and your spread would only get larger over time because obviously you're renting it for more than you're paying. So the bottom line is the laws, Jackie's absolutely right. The laws have gone crazy. I read something in Forbes magazine. Someone sent me a link to an article that said the government's going to supply all rental housing as of 2030. It sure looks like it's coming a lot faster than that right now. And so if you're a landlord, Knowing the law and the changing law and being tuned in, very, very, very important. And if you're involved with RIAs or any real estate organizations, boy, make darn sure when you hear something's coming up that you get the word out. And, you know, because there's no laws that are out there right now to help landlords. And it's just so ridiculous. If tenants don't have to pay rent, well, that doesn't mean that landlords' expenses stop or their mortgage payments stop. And so what ultimately happens? Landlords get behind on their mortgage payments, properties get foreclosed, or else landlords get fed up and sell off their properties. And what really happens is it removes properties from the rental pool and only creates a bigger problem for tenants down the road. So it's it really is something. And I think having good rapport and good communication with your tenants never been more important than now. I mean, our situation we had one tenant that had a problem that we had to make a special accommodation. What was his problem? The government told him he couldn't work. He wrote screenplays for Hollywood, and Hollywood shut down, so he had no source of income. His wife had she worked out of the house and did have some income, but not enough to crack the nut, not enough to pay the bill. And so he contacted me and was really, he was quite tearful almost. He said, you know, for the first time in 40 some years, I'm going to have to go to my dad and ask for a loan. And his dad was a retired physician. And at that point, the market had gone down, and he said, I don't know if he can help. And he did contact me later and said, you know, he can't help. And so my response was, tell me what I need to do. Do I collect no rent, some rent, or all the rent? And this was back in April, I believe. And he responded and said, I have all the money in the bank. So, you know, because we take it out of their bank accounts. So I could grab the rent. But he said, if you do, I'll have nothing left at all. And I said, just tell me what I got to do. And he said, well, if you could take half, that would help a lot. And as soon as the government checks come in, it'll have your name on it. And my response was, it doesn't have my name on it because this is going to be a bigger problem, I think, than you perceive. And you need to hold on to that and get squared away. And we had to do that for 2 months. But other than, and what did he do? He took responsibility. He went out. He got a job. I think he got with some kind of an agency, and he was really embarrassed to tell me what the job was. But ultimately, he went to work for the company that makes Miracle-Gro and was some kind of a coordinator of, you know, who does what when or something to that degree. And my response was, I'm really proud of you. You did what it took. I mean, too many other people are doing nothing. And he went and solved the darn problem. Since that time, you know, all of my rents are in before the first of the month. My tenants are absolutely first class. They're doing everything they should do. And so no complaints. But I think as a landlord, you have to be about more than money. You have to care about your tenants. Because that shows up, and if you don't care about them, it's all about money, then that comes through, I think, to a large degree, and you're going to have more problems in dealing with them down the road. I hope that makes sense,
yeah,
but I found it makes a lot of sense.
You know, when this whole virus thing first started, I think it was back in March, we had like an emergency conference call because I could see that the tsunami was coming. People getting laid off work and businesses shutting down and businesses told they couldn't open up their doors and, you know, no money coming in. There's no money going out. So I could see the tsunami coming. And we had this emergency conference call. And one of the most important things that we talked about is how important it is to communicate. Communicate with your tenants and say, you know, hey, you know, we know this virus thing is going to be a problem. And if you're going to have a problem, let us know. You know, if you've got a mortgage payment, communicate with the mortgage, with the bank or the mortgage company and say, you know, I can't make my payments. You know, can we work out a forbearance agreement? But communication is cornerstone in getting through this crisis that a lot of people are dealing with right now.
Yeah, we called up each one of our tenants at the beginning, each one of them, and we essentially said, you know, if you have a problem, we have a problem. And so we want to know. And so keep us tuned into the loop. And, you know, furthermore, we told them that we believe in the power of prayer. And so if some of you get sick, please let us know that also. And then I went on and further told them that we made a corporate decision that we were not going to raise any rents this year at all. And that really allowed, I mean, it really was kind of the catalyst for people to open up and share their financial situations with us. And in virtually, you know, almost all the cases, everyone let us know that they were fine. But our tenants, we really screen heavily before we ever put a tenant in the property. And we, one of the big things I look at is not only people's ability to pay their bills, but more importantly, their willingness to pay their bills. And the way I kind of analyze that more than anything else is, what's their FICO score? Is credit important to them? And for our tenants, it is important to them, and their FICO scores were good, which meant they did what they said they would do as a rule. And so once they talked to me and told me their situation, we've been fine. And I really do think communication really, really helps. Jackie's right on that. We're both in agreement.
Another really important point that you brought up, David, is when you say when you're a landlord, you have to do these things. Well, there's two different kind of landlords. There could be a landlord that's the owner of the property, but there could also be that you're a landlord and you're just leasing the property from the owner with the right to be able to sublease it to a tenant. I know one of the things that you're going to be teaching in your online class on third day is master leasing, and that's what it's all about, also called sandwich leasing. So if you're in a position where you own the property and you have a tenant, the tenant's not paying, and let's say you have a mortgage payment, even if it's a private lending or you bought it subject to, but if you've got no money coming in, you can't pay that payment, and so it's just a snowball effect. It's a big problem. However, if you master lease that property, if you're just leasing the property from someone out, and if you have really good language in your lease, like David teaches you how to do, you might have a buyout clause. If you've got a tenant that just can't pay the rent, and then that means you can't pay the rent, then hopefully you've got a buyout clause that you can get out of that lease. You can get out of a lease much easier than you can ever get out of a mortgage. So I think at least for the next year or more, it might be a little bit better to think in more in terms of master leasing a property and getting the cash flow that way as opposed to being an owner of the property. Also just the liabilities that are involved as an owner. So what do you think about that, David?
Well, you know, I think that's right. I mean, I think, you know, Peter Fortunato has his 8 benefits that a house can provide. And I think most of those benefits can be acquired through a lease. But the nice thing about a lease versus ownership is you create the documents. And so the documents, give you the clauses needed to mitigate any potential risk. People who bought houses from, let's say, 2006 to 2008, a lot of them wish they didn't buy houses because they no longer own rental houses at this point in time. So whereas people who, if you master lease the property, clearly it's much easier to get out of a lease than get out of title. I've heard a number of people, and I'm in agreement with them, that essentially say that, if you want to buy a house next year, it's going to cost you less than it costs this year, and less still the following year. My crystal ball is no better than anyone else's, but I think we have a very serious problem. We have a lot of debt and a lot of unpaid debt, and there will be a real opportunity, I think, and it will take a while to come down because the government keeps helping folks in the process. But people who are kind of on the edge with rental property, they ought to get out of it now, I think. And those that, you know, have some money on the side or at least have the financial ability to to make deals down the road, I think there's going to be real opportunities. In the meantime, if you can transfer some of the benefits that a house will give you by renting and then leasing to someone else, you're way far ahead. One of the things I'd like to share with people on the call is, you know, I really think it always goes back to the tenants, always does. You can have an excellent house with a bad tenant and you're dead meat. And you can have a not so great property with a wonderful tenant, and the tenant will save you. Now, I wanted to just point out some of the things my tenants have done for me just recently. You know, Jackie pointed out we are doing a seminar the 2nd, 3rd, and 4th of October, and it's an experiment for us because it's going to be a Zoom seminar. And that meant a lot of changes for us. It meant, you know, we couldn't have people sitting in front of a screen for 8 hours a day. We had to cut that down. And how did we get people involved in asking questions and disagreeing with me as I go through it, which is very important to me. It energizes me. I give a much better seminar with questions rather than just talking into a camera. I'm terrible at that. Anyway, a couple of things our tenants have done. One of them, I have two of our current tenants that have agreed to be on a panel at the end of the first day to have landlords ask them anything they want to ask them about how terrible it is to do business with Tilney or whatever else they want to ask, which I think is pretty neat. I also have a prior tenant who's going to call in to that same to be on the same panel, and he's a real special case, I think, because we got crosswise, the two of us, pretty severely crosswise, where we both ended up, you know, hanging up the phone and agreeing that we weren't going to do business anymore. And I like to share this story with you because I think it really shows the importance of the people skills and the importance of caring for people. Here's a guy that, good tenant, nothing wrong with him. He's a nurse anesthetist. And he told me he was going to renew. I sent him a new contract, and he didn't send it back. And it went on, and he didn't send it back. And so I emailed him, I called him, I texted him, and no response. And I had a family reunion. I was headed off to Maine, and I needed to know where we stood so I could get my property squared away. So finally, I got really PO'd. And on a very early on a Saturday morning, I drove up to Woodland Park, where the property was located, and put a for rent sign in his yard. And I got a call. And he was steamed. This was like June, and his rental contract went through July. And he said, "What's going on?" And I said, "Well, I hadn't heard from you." And his response was, "Your problem is not my problem." And my response to that about took me through the roof because I said, you know, your problems are my problems. I care about your problems. And if you don't care about my problems, I don't want to do business. And so he said he'd move, and I said, good. And we ended the call. And so I thought about it a little bit. And, of course, I told my wife, and she said, "You idiot, you did the wrong thing." But I don't think I did, actually. But I thought about it, and I thought, I immediately wrote him an email, and in the email I said, you know, I need to ask your forgiveness or for an apology because I didn't handle it quite right. When I went up to put a for rent sign in your yard, I should have knocked on your door and tried to talk to you. I didn't do that because I didn't know if you were in the operating room all night and had been up all night or what the situation was. Well, partially that was true, but part of it was I was so burned up I probably didn't want to see the guy right then and there. So I went on in my email and said, you know, I think this is the right house for you, and I think you're the right person for us. And I'd like to have a little cooling off period, if you're willing, and then let's get together and talk about it and share expectations and see if we can come back together and have it work. And he called or emailed or did something, and he agreed to think about it. And we did get together. And that experience was wonderful because it changed everything. And we did get on track. And then we had a real problem later on in that one evening while he was in his family room watching TV, we had a water line break under the slab where an addition had been put on in the master bedroom. And when he went back in the master bedroom, he found the bedroom floating and water pouring out. And so he actually called me, and I was in Florida, and I actually was at a, well, I was at a church function, so I turned my phone off. So I didn't get his message until the following morning when I got up about 5 a.m., which would have been 3 a.m. his time. And I texted him and said, sorry, I missed your call. Give me a buzz when you're up. And he called me within 30 seconds. He'd been up all night. He'd had a plumber there constantly with a pump pumping water out. He'd turned off the water at the meter, but of course it was before the meter. And then he called the after hours number for the water company and found it went to someone who lived in Castle Rock, which was an hour away. And he said, well, we need you to come up and turn off the water. And the guy said, you don't want me to come, it'd be too expensive. And the plumber in the background said, yes, we do. So this guy put on his shoes and went up there with a metal detector to find the curb stop and the key, and lo and behold, could not find the curb stop because it was covered with snow. And he slept in his car. The plumber was there all night. And at 5 o'clock, Colorado Springs time, I texted my general contractor, and the text woke him up. So he got out his jackhammer and all of his stuff and went up to Woodland Park. And it took until 1 o'clock that afternoon to get the water turned off. Big, big, big deal. And the everything's frozen, so my contractor found it, and he had to use the jackhammer to access it. And the water company, in its wisdom, had put in all new water lines the previous fall, and when they'd compacted the dirt, they'd bent the rod that went down to turn off the water. So they had to dig down, cut off the rod, and anyway, they got it off. But now we've got this house that's uninhabitable with this tenant that only, I don't know, three months previously, or maybe 4 or 5 months previously, I'd had this big run-in. What a difference. All of a sudden, we're working together as a team to solve the problem. We're calling all around to see some place that can put him up because he can't live in the house while we're dealing with it. And he has a dog, which makes it complicated. He actually finds a place to be for about a week, and I think he left his dog at the house, and he was back every day to see what we did. But I had people up there on Sunday starting on it, and it was a big deal. And it took a little while, but zip, zip, we got it done. And what we really had to do was end up digging up where the water line came into the new addition on the property, finding that, then saw cutting the concrete pad all the way through the master bedroom, down the hall to the utility room where we hooked into the meter. So you can imagine this, you know, jackhammering and digging out and then putting it all back together. He was pleased as punch. He helped us. We helped him. And so really what I'm trying to say on this is this is a relationship business. And if you just do it for the money and you don't work on the relationship, what I see happening in the industry from the professional property managers, which I think is so wrong, is they want people to have self-showings to see the property, which is fine. We don't show properties. They want people to fill out applications online, which we also can do. We do it both ways, both by PDF, and we do have an online application. Then they want people to fill out the lease online. And then if they can, they want to be able to get them the keys without ever seeing them. And how they can expect to create a relationship and to share expectations as to what the job description is for the tenant and how to have it work, I just don't understand. It's just not going to work. You've got to make sure that what you're offering people is something they want. If they don't want it, it's much better to shake hands up front and say, hey, we're both trying to accomplish two different things. What we're supplying is not something you want. Let's shake hands and be friends before you sign a rental contract rather than afterwards, where you end up with someone in the property that views it as a tension situation between landlords and tenants, that they're not on the same team. I think they are on the same team on almost everything. If you look at what tenants want and what landlords want, I think if you go down the list, they're about the same thing all the way through. Tenants want to live in a safe environment. I, as a landlord, want a safe environment. Why? It means less management for me and also more money to my bottom line. There's no conflict there. Tenants want well-maintained properties. I want well-maintained properties. Again, they'll generate more rent. They'll appeal to a better applicant. They'll be cheaper to maintain than run them into the ground and have to resurrect them. Tenants want understanding and agreement regarding the rights and obligations of both parties. Gee whiz, I want tenants to understand what they can expect from us and what we do expect from them. That can't happen if you just hand someone a contract and say, sign here, press hard, last copy's yours, read it later if you want, move into the house, sit in a chair, face the wall, and don't touch anything. And if you do anything wrong, here's how I'm going to beat you up. It just doesn't do what you need it to do. Tenants want to control their occupancy. They don't want the property sold or foreclosed out from underneath them. And they want to be able to stay as long as they want and leave whenever they want. Okay, there's a conflict there in that I want control of the occupancy. Generally, and for my case, pretty much always, I want long-term occupancy. But I also want to be able to terminate it at a moment's notice if something's wrong. You know, we look tenants in the eye, and when we're going through a rental contract with them, and we say, you know, I want you to stay at least until you die, and hopefully until your kids die. And we joke about that, but, I mean, that's what I mean by long-term. We are looking for long-term. A couple more things on my list that I've written down over the years is, tenants don't want to pay late fees. I want an efficient rent collection business that I don't ever have to collect late fees. I have a good friend in Fort Myers, John McFetty, and very successful, bunch of houses, just a top-notch guy and a good personal friend. And he said, I don't like your system at all. And I said, why not? He said, well, I collect $48,000 a year, give or take, on late fees. And my answer to that is, think how much more energy you'd have if you didn't have to run around collecting late fees. How many more houses could you buy, or what other deals could you do? I want a positive relationship that tenants like to talk to me and I like to talk to them. It's a different way of doing business. But to each his own. Everyone, you know, tenants don't want rent increases. You as a landlord need periodic rent increases. So what does that mean? It means you need to share that expectation on day one. So there's not a shock at the end of the initial contract that they say, you know, who do you think you are? I was a terrific tenant this year. I'm going to take a hike. And so the tenant might take a hike because he hadn't been there long enough to accumulate enough stuff and have that enough friends in the neighborhood. And what he doesn't realize is he moves out of your house into another landlord's property, and the landlord had just raised the rent before he moved in. So share those expectations that you do have to raise the rent. We tell them we either have to sell the house or we have to raise the rent or it's going to ultimately get foreclosed at some point. The tenants you want to have want to take your house and make it their home. And you as a landlord, you want tenants who won't be camping out in your house. You don't want people to do that. You want people who will take your house and make it their home. They'll improve it. Our houses generally improve over time. Tenants want more discretion about making decisions about maintaining the house and grounds. They really do. They want to be treated like adults. And I want self-directed, on-site resident managers who will help me minimize my operating costs. There's no conflict there. People like it when you give them responsibility and give them a little say in how to deal with the property. Tenants want an honest landlord. I want honest tenants. You know, landlords must underpromise and overperform any contract obligations in order to gain tenants' trust. That's a biggie. Now, what am I saying with that? Well, too often tenants have had problems with landlords. I had a problem with landlords. I had a situation just after we were married. Mary and I rented this cute little house, And one of the very first things I did was I refinished all the hardwood floors in the house. I didn't do it for the landlord. I did it for me. It was our first home, and it was important to me. Well, and I did a number of other things, and all of a sudden the owners of the property came to me and said, listen, we're moving out of state, and we'd love to sell you the house if you want it. And I was a young kid, and I thought, buy a house? Get off, you know, no way. So they sold it to two gals who had a partnership and ran it as a rental. And down the road, I got transferred with my business, and I moved, and I'd done all these improvements, really improvements, not just the way your tenants say, oh, we've improved the house. I'd done a lot of improvements, and they stole my security deposit. So tenants do have problems with landlords. I mean, some landlords think the security deposit is just the landlord's money. They just need to justify something to be able to keep it. And so that honesty thing works two ways. And you've got to – the way you gain trust with your tenants is you've got to trust them first. If your idea is – you know, I'd love to be in the real estate business if I just didn't have to deal with tenants and toilets. And tenants are liars, and they just go downhill from day one. Well, you're not going to be giving them the trust that you know they're going to do all the right things for your property. And if you don't trust them, they're not going to trust you, and it's not going to be a really good relationship. Tenants want you to respect them, and they want the neighbors and the bureaucrats to respect them. Bureaucrats are terrible on tenants. They treat them very differently than they treat owners. Owners may have something wrong with the yard. They'll leave them alone. But tenants, how many places in the country right now want you to license your rentals and want annual inspections? That some bureaucrat's going to walk through your tenant's house and look at how he keeps house. I mean, just ridiculous. But bottom line is they want our respect and I want their respect. And again, it takes time to do that. They want to be appreciated for their business and stewardship. Anyway, there's any number of different things, but I think there's very little conflict between what a landlord wants and what a tenant wants if you really look at it. And all these millennials and even folks my age, the older folks, they don't want to buy anymore. They want to rent, and they're willing to rent long-term. So there's great opportunities if you just treat people like people and give them respect and let them make decisions to help you in your business.
So in just a little bit, maybe about 10 more minutes, I'm going to open it up for questions from David. If you have a question, just press *6 on your phone right now, and you'll be put in line to ask a question. So, David, you brought up some really good points about this relationship and the expectations that you establish going in. It's very much like hiring an employee. You got to pick the right person for the job, the right person that has the skill set to be able to do the things you're going to do. For example, if you want people to, I remember I had a tenant one time before I knew what I was doing, and they called me and they wanted if I could come over with a screwdriver because their toilet paper holder was loose. Well, if they didn't have a screwdriver, I shouldn't have ever even put them in my house as a tenant. So it's expectations on both sides, and it's very much like hiring the right employee for the job, and that job is to take care of the property and pay the rent. Take care of the property first, pay the rent on time is very important too.
Yeah, I mean, that's the word I use. I always say we're hiring a tenant to do a job, and the job description, number one, is maintain and improve the house and grounds. Number two, pay the rent on time. Number three, get along with the neighbors. Number four, stay forever. Number five, leave us alone, in that order. And yet we're available.
There you go.
Immediately, if someone has a problem and needs a support system, we're there, front and center. Mm-hmm. So hiring is exactly right. Some people say, well, how can you hire a tenant? You're not paying them anything. Yes, you are. The currency you're using is good housing. You are compensating them. So keep that in mind. I mean, if you're an employer hiring someone to do a job, you don't take the first one that crosses a minimum threshold standard. You're looking for the best of the best. And yes, you need to know your state law as to, you know, do you have to take the first come, first served, or can you do best qualified? The only place I know where you have to do first come, first serve is Seattle, Washington. But, you know, if you're in this business, this is not McDonald's. You don't have to do business with everyone who comes in the door. You get to decide who you do business with, subject to not violating any federal, state, or local fair housing laws, which there's no reason for you to violate. You just want good folks that do have the skill set, as Jackie said. You know, we found something in recent years that we'd really messed up on. I had a white-collar tenant, meaning a high-end house he moved into, and he called me up and he said, you know, can you send someone over here to clean this? There's dog hair all over. And I said, well, you know, we had someone clean the carpets after they moved out. And he said, well, not on the carpets, but on the hardwood floors. And I said, well, just take a vacuum and vacuum it up. Vacuum? He didn't have a vacuum. He was crawling around with a wet towel on the floor. So when Jackie talks about a screwdriver, make sure they got a vacuum. Make sure they have mops. Make sure they understand how to use those things. It's really important.
Yeah, and a lawnmower, or unless they're going to be paying for lawn service on themselves. So find out what they have. You know, are they
exactly
do
right.
they have the right tool? You wouldn't hire somebody to be a welder if they don't have any welding equipment. They don't have one of those fancy masks. You've got to find out what equipment they have that's going to make it possible for them to do a good job as an employee of taking care of that particular property. So, David, tell us a little bit more about this class. It's going to be October 2nd, 3rd, and 4th, and it's going to be a Zoom class. A Zoom class. Woohoo! We're going high tech on you.
Well, I, you know, just to tell you the problem I had the other day, within the last week and a half, I had my internet go down for an hour. And all of a sudden I go, oh, my gosh, here we're trying to do an internet class. How am I going to handle this? So we talked around a little bit, and what happened? One of my tenants came to my he saved me, bottom line. The chief information officer for Wycliffe Bible Translators has given me his office for 3 days, and he has redundant internet. He has cable and DSL. And I mean, I just couldn't believe it. He's not that old a tenant. But so we are doing an internet using Zoom. It's tough when you've got three different time zones. We had to figure out how are we going to handle it. And so we're starting at 9 Mountain Time and 6 hours a day. So that's 8 Pacific Time, and it's 11 East Coast. And, you know, we're giving out parts of our manual ahead of time in PDF format and having people read it before the class to save down to save time and not have me read stuff, which is just incredibly terrible anyway. And because we really want the time to answer questions and really convince you that what we do will work, that it's fun, that you can do this for as long as you care to. But I mean, I think one of the great things about being a landlord is no one can tell you you must retire. And let's face it, as you get older, I mean, I'll be 70 this year, you less people want to talk to you. And yet I've got my tenants, and I find it very rewarding, and they like to talk to me and I like to talk to them. So it's an experiment. Will we fall flat on our face? I don't have any idea. But my son-in-law came to me, and he's kind of a techie person who's involved in computers and the internet. And I said, if you'll do it with me, we'll try it one time and see what happens. And quite honestly, we had a class scheduled for Tampa in May, and we had to cancel it. And so we've had a lot of people ask us what we're going to do. We thought we'd do a class, a physical class in Colorado Springs. But with COVID-19, I don't have any idea when the country's going to open back up. But it's not yet.
Mm-mm. Yeah. Yeah, you know, a lot of people are switching over to some kind of an online platform. Even, you know, I do tours in Panama, a 7-day tour across the country, and I can't do those. Country's been shut down. people that don't live here can't even fly into the country. But I have a lot of people interested in moving to Panama later when it does open up. So I switched all the information that I shared during a tour to online version. So, you know, you just have to change. You just have to adapt. And you've done a great job of doing that, David. I'm real excited about this class that you're going to be doing.
Yeah, you can't say I've done a great job until after the class is over.
No, you're going to do it because I know you've done a great job because you've worked out a plan A and a plan B and a plan C. You know, you got the redundant internet and all those things. I know it's going to be a great class. And all the classes that you've done that I've been to were just excellence. And more importantly, all the people that I know that have gone to your class, that have gone away and taken that knowledge and created a huge business of master leasing properties and created $5,000, $10,000, $20,000 a month in cash flow on properties that they don't even own. And the whole key to that is to know how to manage them properly. So between the master leasing, how you get the houses without actually buying them, and then knowing how to manage them correctly, that's what your class is all about. And you've changed so many people's lives by teaching them that skill set.
Well, thanks a lot. We did one other thing that I'll mention that you may or may not know, Jackie. For the first time, anyone who registered, we immediately put them into our Google group on the hassle-free property management right away. Why do we do that? We really want to loosen people up so that when we do the Zoom call, my biggest concern is how do we get people to participate? How do we get them to verbalize? You know, my son-in-law is going to be paying close attention to the chat area and getting people to ask questions and both verbally and through chat. And we thought to put them on the Google group right away, but we've never done that before. That's always been something we've never even advertised. It's always been an extra bonus from coming to the class that if after the class, if you wanted to and asked me, we'd put you on this Google group where you've got, I think we have 700 plus people all around the country, which has been a wonderful tool in your toolbox that if you have a problem, you put the problem out to the group and you have people from wherever come up with helpful suggestions and solutions. So we're trying. Whether we're going to get it right, probably not 100%, but we're going to do the best we can.
I know it's going to be amazing. We have one question from somebody. Is it okay if we go to a question?
Oh, I love questions.
Okay, somebody in area code 346, go right ahead with your question.
Hello, how are y'all?
Good, thanks for calling in today.
My question is, I heard that master leasing was illegal in Texas, and I was trying to find out if that's true or not.
Well, you have to look at your laws, but I can't imagine that master leasing is – master lease optioning, I believe, is illegal in Texas. But I generally do not lease option things. I generally start with a lease. That's my first bite out of the property. And I think you will find that leases – you can do. I leased a house once for 35 years at a fixed rent, and I secured my lease with a deed of trust, which said if the owner didn't pay any of the underlying encumbrances, taxes, or insurance, I could foreclose him. Now, that's pretty strong. I did not have an option on the property, but 10 years down the road, when I and the owners decided it was time to sell the property or exchange it, I was given half the appreciation to remove my lease from the property. So don't do anything illegal. Know the laws. My understanding is you can't do a lease option, but you can do a lease.
Okay. Yeah, I'm from Texas. I haven't lived in Texas since 2010, but this is what the rules were whenever I lived there. You need to verify that it's the same. It's exactly what David Tilney said. You can do a master lease all day long where you lease a house from someone and then you sublease it to somebody else. What you don't want to do is do a lease option whenever you acquire the property, and then turn around and do a lease option whenever with your subtenant. You could even do a lease option when you buy it, and then only do a lease whenever you with your subtenant. But just don't give a lease and an option to your tenant, and you'll be okay. What happened is, I think it was back in like 1998, if I remember right, contract for deed was really, really popular in Texas at the time. A lot of people were doing contract for deeds, and there were some people that did some dishonest things with contract for deeds. So all of a sudden they said, okay, no more contract for deeds, and they lumped lease options into that, considering it what they called an executory contract or similar to contract for deed. So you can do master lease all day long, but you can't do a lease with an option, which is really better for you. And David will tell you this also. If you're going to go after a master lease and you just want to lease the house from somebody, you might not have to give them any money at all. If they're behind on a mortgage payment, you might have to pay that, but you're not going to have to give them any money at all. But if you go to someone, you say, I'd like to get a lease with your property to, with the right to be able to purchase it sometime in the future, that's a lease option. Well, a lot of times people think of that, that, well, then you need to put up a down payment. You need to put up some kind of security there. So then it's going to be more money out of your pocket. So you can get
or
into
pay higher
a master
rent.
Lease. Or pay higher rent or both. And so you can get into, if you just lease the property initially, you're going to be able to get into it for much, much less cash. You can always go to them 6 months later or a year later, and after you've been making your payments on time and they trust you and you trust them and you've got this good relationship going, you can always go back later and talk about getting an option on that property. But it shouldn't be part of the initial negotiations on getting that master lease.
Okay.
Yeah, Jackie said it just right in that she said having that master lease gives you the time to gain the trust. If you will just underpromise what you will do on that master lease and overperform, it gives you the time to gain trust of the owners. And ultimately, when they do want to sell the property, you're going to be the one that they want to sell it to, and you'll find nice things come your way with owner financing and whatever else. Master leasing properties was a great way for me to acquire a whole number of properties over time.
Yeah, me
too. It also gets you to test drive property and see if you even want to buy it. You know, I can tell you from my history, I've bought properties that I thought looked right, smelled right, and tasted right until I owned them and found they weren't right at all. And then I had to figure out how to get rid of them. Something was wrong with them, the drainage, the neighborhood, the whatever it was. Whereas if you lease it first, you can determine if you even like the property and want to go forward.
Okay, thanks for your question. So, David,
thank
we
you.
Had a question that was emailed in that says, what's a good way to find someone that might would be interested in leasing their property with the right to sublease, with you having the right to sublease it to someone else? How do you find that person?
Well, first of all, you got to let everyone know what you want to do. You can't just, you know, it's not going to come to you. There's no map to the gold mine that in 5 minutes you can make $3 million without working. You're going to have to do something. And so I think you start by, I think Bill Cook's approach is very good, where you find a neighborhood you'd like to do business and you knock on doors and say, I'm interested in acquiring a house in this neighborhood. And you don't know when a situation comes up, are you going to buy it? Are you going to loan against it? Are you going to have an option on it? Or are you going to lease it? You've got to start out with the approach that you're there to help people solve problems. If you hear someone that's being transferred out of the area, many times they don't want to sell their house because they think they want to come back to it. Perfect situation. If you think about your community, you ask, are there any property management companies in your town? Bottom line is they're everywhere. So anything a property management company can offer, you can do more. What do I mean by that? If an owner has an inconvenient house that they need to do something with and they call a property management company, what do you think they ask? the very first question typically is, how much do you charge? And they should follow it up with, and what are all the extra nickel dime charges that you can add in? But it's how much. Whereas as a master tenant, it's not a one size fits all. Your job is to find out what the owners need, give them what they need, and find out what's left in the property for you. So there's much more flexibility. You can do things that a management company can't do. For example, rather than just have a performance lease that agrees to pay a percentage of what you receive if and when you receive it, you can have a fixed lease. Or you can have, which says, I guarantee to pay so much rent a month, whether it's vacant or full, and maybe pay some of the expenses that come up on the property, up to a stop loss. Or you can have a hybrid lease that maybe it is essentially a performance lease, but you agree to pay the utilities and advertising between tenants. Management companies can't do that kind of thing, so you can run circles around them. So any way they can pick up clients, you can pick them up the same way. You just can't advertise yourself as a property manager. You are an entrepreneur. You are a professional landlord. You are a principal. The reason the owner will lease the property to you is because of some benefit that you can give them that they perceive as valuable. The reason you will lease the property from them is the exact same thing. They are giving you some benefits in the property which is valuable to you. You just don't say you are a manager, because a manager has a fiduciary responsibility to their principal. You don't. As a master tenant, you are both principals. They are your landlord. You are their tenant. You are your subtenant's landlord, and your subtenant obviously is your tenant. Hopefully that helps.
Yeah, that helps a lot. And I just want to stress again how if you own, especially with what's going on with COVID, and we might be dealing with this COVID for a year or two. We don't know how long it's going to be, even if they come up with a vaccine. When you have 50 million people unemployed in the United States and so many businesses shut down, it's going to take a long time for all of this to get absorbed. So when you're approaching any kind of a real estate transaction, for me personally, I always want to know, how can I minimize my risk? And if you're putting out $20,000 down and you're getting a bank financing for a property that you're hoping you're going to be able to lease out to somebody that's going to keep their job and actually pay it, that's risk to me. That's a lot of risk. But if you're just leasing a property for $900 a month, and maybe you have to pay $900 security deposit, I'm out $1,800. So you can see the big difference in how you've minimized your risk with master leasing. In the time of COVID, which we're in right now, minimizing your risk is extremely important, because we just don't know what the future is going to hold. So we have one more question here. Go ahead, area code 985.
Yes, ma'am. I'm actually going to be attending the seminar. I'm looking forward to it. We were supposed to attend in person in Tampa, so glad to be able to participate online. So I have a question about the master lease. So if,
go ahead.
A question about the master lease, Mr. Jeremy. So my question is, one of the things, I'm currently looking to do my first bit of master lease right now, and part of that is that for a commercial-type scenario, they have some rental leases already, but they're under market rate. Similar to the concept like short-term rental arbitrage, where you would rent something that's at a rate, and then you would use it for, say, you would sublease it. What are your recommendations on something like that when you know that one of my main priorities would be to be very honest from the beginning about what I plan to do? What are your thoughts on something like that?
Well, let me make sure that I understand the question. I think your question is, are you, number one, sharing with the owner of the property that you plan to sublease it? And the answer has to be absolutely yes. Disclose. Then the second thing that went through my mind when you're talking about this was, do you share with them that you're in it to make a buck? And the answer is absolutely, positively yes. And many times I will have the owners back into what I will lease it from them if I'm doing a fixed lease. For example, if someone wants to do business with me, and you'll find if you do this, once you do it once and twice, you'll get referrals, and if you're good at managing, people will come to you and they'll send people to you. So if people want to do business with me, I'll say, okay, I'm not nonprofit, I'm in it to make a buck. So if you pay for management, what would you pay for management? And you'd be amazed, 9 times out of 10, they'd say, well, I guess 10%. And whether that's a number or not, it really doesn't matter. I'm just giving you an example. And then you say, okay, well, how much for vacancy should you take off the market rent? And they'll come up with another figure. And then how much for maintenance, if I'm going to do the maintenance? And they'll start to slow down on how much they come off the market rent because they can see where it's going. But then there's one more category that you're eligible for, and that's profit. Because if you're willing to take the risk and on a fixed lease guaranteeing them the rent, whether it's vacant or full, you're eligible to make a profit. No management company will do that. So you have the owners walk into the rent that you're going to pay. Now, what that starts with is you have to know what the market rent is. You can't have some, you know, realtor come up with a high rent that is unrealistic. You got to know the rent in your marketplace. But then you back down from that. I've never had a problem with people knowing that I'm in it to make a dollar. That's how the world works. But I certainly disclose. I disclose.
Would you?
And Courtney, I want to bring up one other thing that I caught in your conversation. Most of what David does with master leasing is going to be residential real estate, where you're dealing with someone that's actually going to occupy the property. I think you mentioned that you were planning to use this technique or this strategy with commercial properties. Is that right?
Yes, ma'am, with mobile home parks and RV parks.
Ah, okay. Excellent. Well, mobile home park. I like that.
Yeah, I like that too.
So one of my questions was, because this is generally someone who is a tired operator, so tired manager.
Yep.
And they're under managing. And then the question happens to be is, what if they want to use their paperwork? Obviously you want to protect yourself, but what is your thoughts on that?
Well, I think as a master tenant, you've got to create your paperwork between you and them. Any existing rental contracts with the occupants in the park, you've got to live with those contracts that are already there. They just have to assign them to you. Now, when you're dealing with commercial, there's one other thing that you really need to consider, and that is if you're able to raise the rent on the park, you've changed the whole value of the value of the property. So I really do think that is one case where you ought to get a piece of the deal if you're able to increase the value of the property. In other words, you ought to have an option on a piece of it. Yeah,
yeah,
I think.
So you would want to get an option on the property.
Okay.
And I think that's not hard to negotiate in that case. You say, listen, I'm young. I have a high energy level. I'm going to really bust, and I'm going to bring up the value of this park a lot. But for whatever I increase the value, I want a piece of that, and I think that's fair. And you'll do better, and I'll do better. And I think that's very, very feasible. I like that idea of renting mobile home parks a lot. When you started to say commercial, I got nervous because I've had a little office building, and I can remember.
Someone's going to live in there in that mobile home park. So that kind of commercial would be great. And, you know, one of the things that you're going to learn in David's classes, all these little negotiating skills, you know, when to go for the option, when not to go for the option, you know, how to get the price down lower on a master lease so your profit margin's a little bit higher, but also how, you know, things that you can do that you might do initially, and then how long that lease should be. Should you commit for 1 year, 2 years, 5 years, 10 years? How long do you want it to go on? Or should you have a right to renew after the second year? So you're going to learn all kinds of the different twists and turns and angles and different ways that you can do this very, very profitable real estate strategy. But, you know, the bedrock in all of it and making it work, yes, you can get the master leases, but if you don't know how to manage the properties correctly, if you don't know an easy, systemized way of collecting the rent, if you don't know how to have that communication with people so that you pick the right people to move into your tenant, whether it's a mobile home park. By the way, you can do master lease on just a mobile home also. So if you don't know how to have that communication so that you have less chance of picking the wrong person, then that's what this class is all about, is teaching you how to have the communication, how to pick the right people, how to negotiate deals that are going to be profitable, and having the right paperwork that's going to protect you throughout the whole thing, both the paperwork with the person you're leasing from and the paperwork of the person that you're leasing to.
And
how to
question.
Meet the owner's needs in the process. I mean, that's crucial. Yeah, I'll be quiet.
Yeah, it's absolutely crucial. So, David, for anybody that's interested in David's class, to get more information about it, just go to his website, which is his name, www.davidtilney.com. He's got a little bit more information, and you can get signed up for the class right there. I'm really, really excited to hear about how it goes, David. I know... anytime we do something a little bit different, I know you're so comfortable standing up in front of your classroom and teaching the class. It's like you could do it in your sleep, and this is going to be a little bit different for you. But unfortunately, COVID's made it necessary, but you may find that you really like it. And it's going to be a whole new avenue for you to be able to reach people. There's no airfare. There's no hotel expenses. There's no eating out or any of those things. And one of the things about a live event that I love is the networking opportunity. But you've already put that in place with your Google Groups that people can go to. And it's a way to network with other people that have already been to David's class and people that are currently in the class, to say, well, what do you think about this thing that David talked about today? And yeah, I used that strategy and it worked really good. And so you've already got the networking in place for everything also. So all the components are there to have an amazing event, and I know it will be.
Well, thanks, Jackie. Well, we'll have to see. I hope so.
That's going to be great.
You know, COVID-19 has clear. Well, we're probably at the end, but we've picked up some real benefits that COVID-19 has given us, like on how to show properties and how to sign leases, and so we've come up with some really good stuff there. And we're probably out of time now. I don't know if we're not, but I leave that to you. But some things have.
If you want to talk about it a little bit, we have more time. We still have a lot of people
good.
Online.
Good. Okay. Okay. Then, if I can do it, I'll share two things that happened that I think were really good from COVID-19. You know, people who know me know that my tenants show my properties. They've done it for years, and over 90% of the time, we go from a tenant to a tenant with zero downtime. We just have people who cooperate and they do a super job. And so that works real well. But with COVID-19, we couldn't do that. So we had to come up with an alternative strategy. Not that we've had any houses come up that were tenant occupied during COVID-19, but we came up with a solution. And the way we came up with it is my son-in-law has a kind of a parallel company, and he keeps taking on new properties. And in taking on new properties, they're vacant when he takes them on, but he still doesn't want to march a whole bunch of people through the property, either polluting the property or people, being it groups of them going through. So his approach recently has been that he'll make appointments 20 minutes apart for people to see the property, and he will go to the property. They will not. He will call them on a video call and spend 20 minutes with them walking through the property, answering any questions they've got, going out in the backyard and turning around 360 degrees and what have you. That gave me an excellent idea for future, and that is I think we're going to get our tenants to do video walkthroughs with potential applicants for the properties. That eliminates ever having 50 people walk through their house. It eliminates the potential for something to disappear in their property. It eliminates the risk of rape or murder or anything else. And they're totally safe and protected. And if they don't like what's happening on the phone, they hang up the darn phone. And they can have... they can schedule showings kind of on the fly. And yes, we've done videos of our properties, but it's very effective when you tell people that, yeah, we have a video I can send you, but we want you to see the house the way it is right now, not when we gussied it up and made it look just perfect. We want you to be able to ask the existing tenant anything you want to ask about it. And that is, I think, a game changer for us. Another thing that happened to us is I recently signed a rental contract. When I was in Naples, Florida, the house was in Colorado Springs, and the applicant was in Houston, Texas. And so we used Zoom to go through our rental contract. And when I went through it, I shared the document on Zoom. And the nice thing about that was the tenant couldn't go ahead of me and be in a different place in the document than I wanted him to be. I want to be able to tell the stories as I go through it and share the expectations. And I could control that 100%. The other thing that we discovered was since I shared a Word document on Zoom, that anytime we needed to make a change to it, I could change it on the spot. Then I could turn it into a PDF, ship it off to them at the end of when we were done going through the lease up. They could initial it in various places and sign it and get it back to me. It was not a bad way for doing business if you couldn't be eyeball to eyeball and belly to belly, which is my first choice. But in this day and age, we can't do the first choice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we've all had to adjust our lifestyle in a lot of different ways, and in many ways, I like the way that I've changed things up than the old way I did things. And you're discovering the very same thing with leasing up a property with a lease up.
Yep.
So it's fun. We just keep evolving. That's all we can do is just keep evolving, continue to provide a good house for people to move in and picking the right employee to be moving into it. So, David, once again, I want to thank you so much for being on the call, and I want to thank everybody that called in tonight on very, very short notice to be on this call. I think we had over 100 people on the call. Please go to David's website and check out his upcoming seminar that he's going to do, a Zoom seminar on October 2, 3, and 4. His website is www.davidtilney.com. Thanks again, David, and good night, everybody.
Yeah, and Jackie, I want to thank you very much for putting this together. This was great.
You're very welcome. I'm always glad to help, David. Thanks. Good night, everybody.
Good night.